I'll now like to start off with the question and answers. I'll start with the ones that have been posted online, and then once we get those through those questions, if time allows, I'll open up the phone lines for questions. So let's start up back. I think the first question we had may have already been covered by Katie's presentation, but I just want to reiterate it anyway just to make sure. The question was, in reference to the map showing velocity, do you have the reference markers or other geographic marker to show the specific length of road? For Wyoming, I assume the section of I-80 is red. In red is near Rock Springs and Green River, or somewhere between reference markers 66 to 130. It would be helpful to have specific reference markers.
This is Jeff Short. You will be able to, if you have this in the GIS software, of course you can zoom right in. The mile markers will also be listed in the output from the query. So you will be able to see down to the 3 mile segment level.
Jeff, why don't you
where and what the issues are as far as what the average speed is.
Jeff, maybe you can just explain a little bit to the audience about the 3 mile segment and the rationale for differentiate that this is not spot speed. I think you did it in the one slide that had the different descriptions of 2 points and how you use the time elapsed and distance travel to calculate average speed. But maybe you could just elaborate on the fact that, you know, this is not spot speed. It really is looking at speed more like an average operating speed between 2 points. So maybe you can just elaborate on that a bit.
Yes, as Crystal indicated, we are looking at operational speeds here. It's one thing to say, all right, at this point on a highway, this vehicle was going 57 miles per hour, but it's definitely another, possibly more unique thing to say, over 35 miles, this was the average speed of this truck, and this is, thus, it starts to build a picture of what trucking operations are really doing over periods of time, not just at one instant in time. And one of the slides described that points may be 60 miles apart, and the vehicle is moves across those 60 miles in 60 minutes. Then we can all calculate the average travel rate, of course, and that travel rate will apply to that segment during that time period that it was moving.
And I just wanted to reiterate on the mile posting, the application allows you to pick mile posts based on your state mile posting, but when you bring it into your GIS, it is based on the entire interstate mile posting, which was created when the data were being processed from the original raw data. But you will be able to determine it based on the state boundaries and so on that are within the geodatabase.
All right.
And then another thing, this is Jeff Short, I'd like to add to the discussion of spot speed. There is a much larger database of spot speeds that we may incorporate into this web tool at some point. Of course, that would be disclosed, but it may be a completely separate application. Or it may be it may be worked into this this operational speed method that we're using currently with the FPM web tool. And that's all.
Okay, thank you. So our next question, let me just scroll back to it here. Was
one of the yellow polylines?
Yeah, what are the area polygons in yellow on the FPM example page?
What he's referring to is the yellow that's here showing Virginia. This was just a query within the ArcGIS server itself where we were specifying state name equals Virginia, and you run it and it highlighted the Virginia polygon. You can also do this with segments of the roots or any other layer that exists within the GIS software.
Kitty, on the opening page, were those MPO regions the very first screen?
Yeah, these are the MPO regions, you're correct.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that for us. And then we did also have a question about what is the level of confidence in the data?
This is Dan Murray. I did pose the question to the questioner about what level of confidence she's referencing. There is, you know, the question, legitimate question about the resolution, accuracy of the GPS or position point to where we're mapping it. There's a sort of a confidence level question about the percentage of points that are within some polygon. So we need to know essentially what level of accuracy to what data, given there's so many different aspects to the system, what level of confidence or what degree of accuracy they're referencing.
Okay, so we'll...
in fact, she just answered. Thank you, Susan. Confidence of the velocity speed that we calculate. In some ways, the most practical answer to that is how accurate is our calculated speed to the ECM engine speed. We did do some limited testing of that in a different project using some FPM data. It was an assessment of the role of speed limiters in safety. And I believe, Jeff, you might want to jump in here, that our ECM engine speed data was, at least in one node, 56.2, and I think we were at 56.8 miles per hour. But in total, we've never really done sort of a comparison or a probe of ECM speed data against our FPM calculated data. Anecdotally, Crystal and Jeff have done some assessment of that, and I think, Crystal, it's safe to say that you've been fairly comfortable. Is that true?
And I think the point that Jeff made earlier about this not being spot speed data, so it's I mean, in some instances, I mean, depending on how free flow and you know how much congestion there is, you could expect that some of the average operating speeds might be aligned with, for instance, what you get from an ATR. But the data that's currently going to be available in the web tool is not spot speed data, so it's always going to be sort of, you know, based on average operating speed over a given segment of highway. We do have a planned effort with our Office of Policy that collects ATR data from all the states to do some comparison of our spot speed data, which is another data set we have available, with some of the ATR data. And at that point, like Jeff said, that we have within our research budget, we do have planned enhancements for the web tool. So this is, again, as Kitty pointed out, just the actually the pre-beta version, but we'll do some beta testing with a small select group of folks, and we'll get feedback on how it can be enhanced. And we do have a research item in our next research budget that allows us to do some enhancements to the web tool. So the intent is to get it, at least the initial version, out into the hands of the folks who make the decisions and use the data, and to get feedback and to use that feedback to make whatever enhancements we can given the data set that we have available.
Okay, thank you. And we'd also had a question about, what about adding in crash data? How do you know where or when there's a construction or maintenance zone, and how do you anticipate the usefulness of the standard deviation? Will there be average ranges, etc., available?
So I'll answer the first part. At the national level, if you remember my presentation, I said that for the most part, we've been focused on deriving national level measures. So at the corridor level, that was sufficient for what FHWA's internal needs were at the headquarters level. So the intent of putting this down to the state level is that you have the data and you begin to look at, if you have a planned work zone or have a work zone in place, you'll be able to use this data to see before and after enduring effects of that work zone. So at the national level, the work zone example that Jeff presented is just a result of a coordination effort between two entities within the Office of Operations. So we have a work zone management team within the Federal Highways Office of Operation. They came to us and said, we have this project ongoing, can you use this data to look at the impacts and effects of a work zone? So that's how, we don't have any national work zone data set that we can add as a layer to this, but the intent is that as a tool that you can, states and MPOs and others who have an interest can use to look at their work zones and how the freight movement is impacted by those work zones, if that's a performance measure you want to look at. So there is no national work zone database that we've overlaid this data with, but if someone would come to us and say we have this planned work zone, whether it's a resurfacing, a complete lane closure, or whatever, we could use this data to look at the impacts of those work zones. But there is no national effort to add a layer with national construction or maintenance zones. And I'll let Jeff answer the last part about standard deviation in average ranges.
I would add to that that question and Crystal's answer that this tool shouldn't necessarily be used to identify where work zones are, but should be used to assess the impact of different types of work zones on freight movement. So you may be able to take that data and extrapolate and say, in the future, we're going to have a work zone here. What does that mean for freight movement? How much is that going to cost trucking, for instance? So I'll leave it at that. Hopefully that answers the question.
The question about the standard deviation, the way the data are aggregated to get to the 3 mile segment per hour is any truck that crosses that 3 mile segment, the speed of that truck is added to all of the speed of every truck that crosses that 3 mile segment during that hour. And so the standard deviation just provides you a measure of the variability across that 3 mile segment across that hour of when the data were collected. So it's really just a probably a spot check, if you will, to make sure how much variability you see in that speed value. And it's more just for your analysis and not really for any reporting requirement.
Okay, thank you. I do see there are quite a lot of questions coming in, and we will try and move through these quickly so that we can cover all of the questions that you're asking. The next question I saw is that how many motor carriers were involved with this research?
Well, it's continuous, so it's not over. It's a continuous research program, and as Jeff mentioned, this particular web tool is based on approximately 325,000 vehicles, but the FPM initiative itself has somewhere near 500,000 vehicles that are both not only commercial trucks, but also trailer tracking devices are included also. So, you know, we don't disclose who our partners are, but in terms of the total number of vehicles for the FPM effort overall, it's near 500,000. And for the FPM web tool, the initial version, which will be rolled out and that was described in today's presentation, is about 325,000 vehicles nationwide and in Canada, too, even though our current web tool doesn't include Canada and Mexico.
Okay, great. And the next question is, what share of the truck traffic in these sections is measured?
Well, Jeff, maybe you could talk about perhaps future capability of saying how many vehicles were included in a speed, but that won't be an initial feature in the rollout, but you can talk about that, Jeff.
Since we don't collect data on the vehicles that we don't collect data on, is one way to say, is essentially what's happening at one interstate route at one any given time is kind of unknown if it's not part of this data set. You can say there are 325,000 trucks in this and there are 3 million large trucks, therefore we've got this percentage covered. But if you look at just a 3 mile segment of highway, that number is not readily available. as far as what the mix is on that segment of highway?
I think we have looked at some limited instances where we have HPMS and cordon count data, and the truth is our database in terms of the representativeness of all large trucks, which are typically classified as class 7 and 8, 26,000 and 1 pounds and over, usually 5 axle, you know, our percentage range is anywhere from 10% or more of all trucks out there to percentages that are probably in the scale of 25 to 40% of the traffic mix when compared to the cordon counts. So that's another way of saying if there's X number of trucks on a 3-mile segment, we could have as many as 40% of that percentage of trucks out there. But as Jeff pointed out, we would need to have the disparate independent data on how many trucks are in any particular segment for us to sort of estimate our representation. We can estimate that immediately and easily once we know what the total count is on the corridor, in the segment, or in the network, because again, we know what our discrete numbers are.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is, how feasible is it to add goods value or weight to the data set? Are these data readily available from surveys or some other form? This would be of particular would be of interest particularly for cross-border freight traffic.
Well, this is Jeff Short. Currently, we do not have commodity information. We just, for the most part, analyze the data elements I showed earlier. We also have spot speeds and whatnot. But as far as commodity goes, that's something that we want to leave out of the data set in order to protect privacy, et cetera. And also, oftentimes, that information is just not linked with this data source at all.
And I can't speak right now to like how it could be integrated with the freight analysis framework, for instance, but certainly there are possibilities to use the two data sets in combination with one another to understand not just the speed but the value of and the flow of, you know, commodities from the freight analysis framework over the interstate highway system.
Yeah, this is Kitty. The freight analysis framework right now is reporting annual values. And you can aggregate the speed data to an annual speed, travel speed, which then could be directly correlated with the FAST data to break the FAST down into, you know, hourly segments or hourly data isn't practical, but potentially you could do some modeling or something that could bring it down to a daily or a weekly or some aggregation in that fashion.
Okay, thank you. If distances are 60 miles, then how effectively can this application be used within metro areas?
I'm not sure what Nate's referring to with 60 miles, because it does get down to the 3-mile segment, so you can use it at 3-mile segments.
I think Jeff may have given an example using 60 miles, so that may be the disconnect there. So it's good to know that it does break down to the 3 miles, so it will be feasible for a metro area to find this useful.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, perhaps when we put out the guidance and user guide that comes with this, we'll have up front maybe some charts that describe the attributes of the data, because even though some of the data points are as infrequent as, you know, every hour, there are some points that are as frequent as every 10 or 15 minutes. So all that information will be disclosed about the attributes of the data in some format when we fully implement the web tool.
Okay, our next question. Do you have comparative data between trucking and auto trips? Do speed limiters installed on trucks affect the speed or calculation of reliability analysis?
Well, I mean, some of these trucks do have speed limiters, so the characteristics of the truck could have some bias because there are speed limiters on some of the truck, but I'll let Dan maybe elaborate on that. So I'm not sure in terms of, I mean, the speeds themselves are still going to be characteristics of the characteristic of the vehicles operating on a particular segment at a given point of time, but the fact that some of them have speed limiters can put some bias in the data, but I would venture to say that these carriers are the more safety conscious type of drivers that we would want to have on our highway system, so the speed limiters is not a bad thing. But I'll let Dan or Jeff maybe elaborate on the impact of speed limiters on the data set.
Well, this is Dan Murray. I would say because the FPM is attempting to capture what is rather than conceptually what ought to be, the fact that major carriers, for instance, Conway is limited at 62 miles per hour, Schneider 65, this is the ideal database for not speculating and modeling on truck speeds, but calculating what the real truck speeds are. And in that case, it becomes even more imperative that we're able to document posted speed differentials, for instance, in California, 70 versus 55, along with some work that Professor Steve Johnson has done with ATRI out of University of Arkansas that shows there's natural differentials and natural speed inclinations between automobiles and trucks. And those safety differentials are critical. So we're not presuming that all trucks are driving the posted speeds. In some instances, they're higher. In many instances, they're lower. And so the what is documented by FPM. I would say that's probably one of the strengths of the data.
And this is Jeff. One more thing to add to that. One of the major uses of this tool, of course, is to identify congestion in areas where trucks are not moving, and speed limiters aren't going to affect those areas. If a truck speed limiter is set at 62, if it's set at 60, that isn't really going to affect how bad congestion is as it shows up in the FPM data.
And I think the next question about
The next question is, I think, a clarification maybe for the work zone and incident question from previously about how do you know if the work zones or incidents were in place when the data was being collected?
Right, and it's continuous data collection, so there's no lapse in data collection. We get data 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, regardless of, you know, whether there's an incident or not. The only way we were able to do those descriptions of the work zone and the wildfire incident in Florida was because somebody came to us after the fact and said, we had this event, what was the impact on freight movement? So those examples were based on somebody telling us, for instance, in the North Carolina work zone example, that there was a work zone in June 2008, and the wildfire was, we wanted to look at the impact of a known wildfire. So the data collection is continuous, so it's not going to be, you're going to be able to look at it in real time. So that's probably another point that we didn't give a lot of attention to in the discussion thus far, is that this data is historical data, so it's not intended to be for traveler information or for any type of application like that. It is always going to be historical data. Normally, as Jeff pointed out, it's going to have about a 30-day lag, so you won't see, for instance, April 2009 data until May of 2009.
I would add that we're working closely with Jerry Ullman from TTI, who's sort of a work zone guru out there, to look at the utility and applications of FPM on work zones. So there may be more coming in that area.
And the application is set up so that you can go back and specify to the hour, the hour, day, whatever, of an incident. So if you wanted to go back and look at the impact of an ice storm that you knew occurred, such as when our flyover ramps froze last year, you can go back and extract the truck speeds for that section of road for that time, and then look at it on either end as well.
Great. Okay, almost through the questions. Just a few more to go. Are there any plans to eventually expand the data coverage to non-interstate, non-national highway system routes?
From the overall program, we already have access to more data than we know what to do with. So in terms of coverage, our analysis and the tool is based on those 25 interstate corridors. But in addition to the actual web tool itself, you know, here at Federal Highway, we you could contact me initially if you're a public entity, and we have a provision within our contract with ATRI to look at non-interstate routes. So we have access to data on non-interstate routes. It just won't be in this version of the web tool. And I know Jeff has already talked to me about, you know, probably some very near to medium term expansion plans to include the entire interstate system. But the non-interstate routes, I'm not sure when they'll be available in the web tool. But if you're a state DOT or an MPO and you have specific routes that you want some sort of ad hoc analysis done on for a non-interstate route, then we have the capability to get access to that data. It just has to come into Federal Highway as a request, and we can consider it on a case-by-case basis in terms of when we might be able to provide a data product for a non-interstate NHS route. But in terms of our data coverage, our only limitation is whether or not there's a significant amount of these vehicles that are included in our data set traveling on that highway. So if you, for instance, look at a drayage operation where you don't have typically long-haul vehicles, but you have more of the, you know, the pups and the smaller type of vehicles operating, if they aren't equipped with this GPS technology and aren't a part of the data set that we have access to, then we won't have data. But our major limitation is not necessarily by route, it's by whether or not there's a significant amount of vehicles that are included in our data set traveling on a particular route.
Okay, and we had one last question, which Dan Murray was kind enough to respond to, and I'll just quickly summarize the question and response here, is whether or not the truck counts were available by section, hour, day, week, etc. And as Kitty and Dan has mentioned on here, yes, the data can be analyzed by day parts or days or weeks, months, etc. So that is covered. I think that's the end of our typed in questions. Or
and maybe the question can say, are you looking for the truck counts or the truck speed return? Are you asking, is the web tool going to give you the ability to see the number of trucks included or the average speed by day a week? Because what Dan's provided an answer to is that yes, you can. We can provide an average speed by day a week, any part of the day, etc. But the question says truck counts, so just maybe make sure the question was fully answered. Are you talking about counts or average speed?
Yeah, and this is Dan Murray. My reference, as Crystal indicated, is, you know, you could look at the truck speeds by, you know, every 5 minutes, 15 minutes per hour, a day of week, you know, every 2 a.m. in the month of March over the 3 years, et cetera. But whether if you're asking the specific truck counts, and it looks like Mary Lee is asking that, then I don't believe this tool generates that data. Is the data knowable? Yes, through this tool. I do not believe that's true. Do you agree with that, Kitty?
Right, we do. The way that we aggregate the data for this tool is it's straight average speed per segment per hour. There's no, the only measure is that standard deviation. There is no N to that that's saved in that formulation.
And we did consider that, so I'm not sure of the technical why of why it's not included in this version, but we will continue to investigate why the N can't be displayed, but it's possible, but it's just not in this version.
If there's some concern that it could be misused as a truck count, which
okay.
Is not.
Right. It's just a vehicle speed. It means a truck was there, not necessarily a different truck.
Right,
time.
And it only captures the ones that have that you're collecting data from. So if you only have 10% of the truck traffic in that area, you're missing 90% of the trucks, and you can misuse that N as being a wrong truck count.
Right.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that response. Diane, we are ready for questions over the phone. We have a few minutes, so just if we have a couple questions, that'd be great. So Diane, if you can instruct the us all on how to answer questions over the phone.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please, while we wait for the first question. Again, any questions or comments, please press star 1 and record your name clearly. Again, please press star 1. Carolyn Matlow, your line is open.
Hi, I just wanted to comment. I think this looks like a really great tool. And I thought I could clarify the reason I was asking about the trunk counts, because we are able to take a segment of road using our ATR data and give an estimate of what type of truck would be on that section, such as by classification of the truck. And so I thought if we had the number and we knew it was either a 7 or an 8, then we'd know what percentage would be represented on that section based on our other data. And then, if we have that, it sounded like if I gave you that information, you could return with some of that information back. Me.
Yes, and I mentioned that our Office of Policy, Dr. Tong's section over in Federal Highway's Office of Policy, he and I have been talking about doing just that, as at least, you know, as part of, again, the information that goes out when we're disseminating the tool, is taking some of that ATR data and doing a comparison of our counts with the counts and the speeds with the speeds returned. So that's a great point that, again, you know, we're continuing. This is a first step, and we hope to continuously make improvements, but that's good feedback. And when you get access to the tool, you know, any feedback you have like that would be very beneficial and very helpful in making this a better tool in the future.
Okay, and I had one other question. You said it was classes 7 and 8 that were largely represented, and I had understood that 8 through 13 are what is accepted as a commercial vehicle size or class.
It's interesting because industry and government use different truck classifications, so someday we'll get that one ironed out, but essentially these would be 26,001 through 80,000 pound with LCVs in some instances. And so it would, in theory, cover up through your class 13, in some cases 14.
Okay. Thank you.
I show no further questions.
Thank you. I did just want to let you guys know, we did just quickly post a poll question just to get your initial feedback, just based on what you've heard today, if you think this tool is going to be useful to you. You can always contact the presenters or myself if you have questions or have any comments that you think might be useful right now. I just want to thank you all for attending today's seminar. The recorded versions of this event will be available within the next week on the Talking Freight website. And I just wanted to give a quick mention of the Federal Highway Freight Peer-to-Peer Program, it puts the public sector freight transportation professionals in touch with experts in the field and provides technical assistance in order to enhance overall freight skills and knowledge. The program is available to public entities, including state departments of transportation and MPOs. And to learn more about the program or to arrange a peer exchange or to discuss participating as a peer expert, please visit the peer-to-peer website. The next seminar will be held on May 20th and will be about higher productivity trucks. So I'm going to leave this poll question up, and I'm just going to quickly website link. If you want to be reminded about when the tool goes live, you can click here and sign up to get that notification. And with that, we will close it out. If you haven't done so already, I encourage you to visit the Talking Freight website and sign up for the May 20th seminar. The address is up on your screen, and I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you've not done so already. All right, thank you. Have a good day.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.